Hello, and welcome to Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy, where we want everyone represented and empowered in our democratic republic. Citizen 411 is powered by the League of Women Voters. We're nonpartisan and never promote candidates. We help people understand the issues so they can vote responsibly. I'm Tracy Riley Kelly.
And I'm Teresa Torres.
And I'm Rachel Bancroft.
This month, in December, we're still discussing the 2025 election in Washington State and all over the country. We're also looking forward to 2026. But meanwhile, we want you and your family to enjoy the holiday events.
Our guest today is Michael Jones. Michael's vice president of Clark County, Vancouver, NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. First founded nationally in 1909 and right this year celebrating the Vancouver branch's 80th anniversary. Michael is currently vice president of NAACP Vancouver, as well as chair of its Legal Redress and Civil Rights Committee. A graduate of Howard University, he came west from the D.C. area.
Welcome, Michael. So today we're here to talk about your organization, the NAACP, and also to focus on the shocking level of attacks on anything DEI rapidly being dismantled everywhere. So what is the NAACP? What's your mission?
Yeah, so the NAACP was founded in 1909, really from the need for advocacy. It is the nation's oldest civil rights organization, and our mission is to make sure that we are representing people from a political, educational, social, and economic standpoint, making sure that there is this sense of equality, not just for Black people, but all people around the country, and making sure that we're doing what we need to do, one, to eliminate racism, and then two, focusing in on what we need to do from a discrimination standpoint.
Thanks. So what are the main areas that your chapter here, right here in Clark County, focuses on? And then how do they connect to the broader civil rights work of the NAACP nationwide? What kind of initiatives or programs? I'm just going to throw it all at you.
Throw it all out. Yeah. So one of the things that I think our president, Larry Nelson, did great this year was he expanded all of our committees. So currently we have a housing chair. We have a committee that focuses on LGBTQI+. We have a committee that focuses on men, women. We have my committee, Legal Redress and Civil Rights. We also have the housing, we have youth and education, and then we have a STEM and arts program as well. And for us, what we are really doing is focusing in on a holistic mission, right? So we're focusing on men, women, seniors, children, education, and also the civil rights that kind of come into the different intersections of what everything is. So housing, food, healthcare. So it's been great for us to really be able to form partnerships with a multitude of organizations within Clark County. And it's been interesting because our branch is specifically named for NAACP Vancouver, but we've been partnering even with different cities and municipalities in Ridgefield and Camas with the county council. So it's been good for us to develop relationships outside of just the Vancouver branch so that those different intersections of life touch so many more different things.
Across the country, and even here locally, many organizations are reevaluating their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts due to this pressure and discrimination from our federal government. People are getting frightened, Michael. And so here's an interesting spin I have on this. Are your local allies still with you? Is there backsliding? What happens when people are scared?
So I think naturally you are prone to want to retreat. Right. You're prone to wanting to be careful, whether it is, hey, I don't want to step on someone's feet. I don't want my feet stepped on. I don't want funding touched or to be impacted. Like, everyone needs funding. But what I have seen is people are just looking at what does diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, access look like. And I think when you talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, specifically when you're creating these programs and when you're creating these initiatives, the key is getting it woven into the work that you're doing day in and day out. Because when it's woven into the natural sense of what you're doing, and it's just something that's, I keep using this, my grandmother must be talking about me, when it's woven into the fabric and the DNA of your agency, of your organization, et cetera, your mission statement, your purpose statement, your vision, it's just something that's naturally done, right? And I think that is where we see a lot of organizations that where it's like, hey, we have to have an initiative and we have to have a program. And while I don't disagree, while those things are good for checks and balances, but when we get to a space where it's just a part of who we are, mm-hmm. and it's in our DNA, then it's like, hey, we're doing this work naturally. So mm-hmm. there's no need for the program, and there's no need for this office. And again, I want to just emphasize, I don't agree with tearing down or going away from these programs. I think that they're valuable, but I think the key for us as the NAACP, from an advocacy standpoint, standing with different agencies and organizations that are committed to doing the work, is like, hey, how can we commit to doing the work and it become part of what we're doing? Mm-hmm. When it's not part of what we're doing, that's when you see it being easier to be targeted, because then it's like, hey, this is the program. Okay, mm-hmm. well, great. Well, if you were just doing this mm-hmm. as it relates to, age or ethnicity or gender, mm-hmm. so on and so forth, then it's just like, hey, this is just something that we're doing. And then there's no call out. There's no pinpoint to say, hey, we can attack you here, because there's nothing to be attacked, because this is how we're operating.
That makes sense.
Well, yeah. Now, although here's an example. The Department of Transportation has made it harder for minority and women-owned businesses to qualify for federal contracting, which has been very much an important way, economic opportunity. Have you seen this affect people in our local area?
Yeah, I think it affects people because they're scared to do the work that they were already doing. I think that you see a lot of people who are tiptoeing around, hey, before we had diversity, equity, inclusion, now you see culture and belonging. Now you see justice, right? And I think people do, at the end of the day, they need to be careful, because at the end of the day, their funding and, so on and so forth, and livelihoods could be impacted, especially when you think of people's full-time roles being involved with purely diversity, equity, inclusion work. You now see the attack on restorative justice or racial equality, right? So when you have people who are literally going after these programs and these initiatives, yes, it's going to be impacted. And we see a lot of organizations, I've even been to, I think, 2 or 3 conferences within the past month, and people are, past 2 months, and people are asking the same question: how do we move forward, mm-hmm. right? We're nervous about being targeted by the current administration for the work that we're doing, because it's right, right? And that's the funny part, because it's one of those things where it's just like, hey, this is, we're doing this work because it's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, we have to do this work because it's the right thing to do and name it because of the simple fact that we've not been doing this work for so long. Mm-hmm. So now it's kind of like, hey, this is marginalized. They're marginalized. Okay, well, they've always been marginalized, but now we're actually calling it out and saying what it is. And I think because of the current administration's maybe problem with who's benefiting, who's not benefiting, I'm trying to figure out what's the right way to say it, but when you look at who is benefiting, who's not benefiting, that's really where the issue is coming into play. It really did not become an issue when you talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, until you saw marginalized pockets of people rising up in politics or education or in the healthcare space. And it's just like, oh, wait a second, they're becoming doctors. Oh, wait a second. We have the largest congressional black caucus in the history of the nation. Oh, wait a second. We have, you know, they're becoming presidents of universities and they're becoming this and that. And now it's like, oh, wait a second. We need to figure out why this is all happening. Mm-hmm. So it's even deeper than what diversity, equity, inclusion, I think people make it to seem like. Mm-hmm.
Michael, representation is powerful, and students really benefit when they see teachers who reflect their identities and experiences. From your perspective, I'm just curious, how does that kind of representation affect students' sense of belonging and success in school?
So I think representation matters drastically. From a safety perspective, from an engagement perspective, and then I'll also say from a retention and, hey, what's the move forward perspective. So my first teacher who was black was my gym teacher in high school, right? I didn't see another black teacher until I got to my current my university when I went to Howard. Yeah. And it's interesting because people have this conversation around like, hey, why do you have to go to a historically black college or university? Well, it was created for me, mm-hmm. right? It was interesting because when you think of some of the people who went to Howard University, Kamala Harris, Thurgood Marshall, Toni Morrison, all of the, you know, Elijah Cummings, so on and so forth, I almost tapped. When you think about some of those people, they went to these universities because they, not that they couldn't always go to, you know, what was called as a PWI, a predominantly white institution. It's one of those things where it's like, hey, these institutions are created for you and they're going to challenge you because they have to challenge you. Mm-hmm. I got a C on a paper, Dr. Ernest Quimby, social economics professor. And he says, this is unacceptable. You need to redo this. And I said, well, it's a C. It's passing. And he said, that's not passing. And I'm not going to allow you to keep the C because you have to do better and you have to be better. And when you think about, even when you talk about this representation standpoint, it's one of those things where like these professors can go to any schools in the world to teach. But it's kind of like, hey, I'm sitting here at this university, and if I don't hold you to a higher level and responsibility, no one else is going. So like, I'm here because I have to be here, because I have to hold you responsible to do better, to be better. So it's an interesting standpoint. So when you see these professors that look like you, when you see people in the, you know, different industries, whatever industry you want to talk about, it's kind of like, hey, they came here, I see them, I can actually be that person mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, we need to take a quick break. We have been speaking today with Michael Jones of NAACP, and you are listening to Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy.
The Columbian continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project pays for reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including housing, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Welcome back to Citizen 411, and we're your hosts, Tracy Riley Kelly, Rachel Bancroft, and me, Teresa Torres. And today we've been talking and speaking about the NAACP with Michael Jones. So, healthcare is not given with equity in the U.S. Can you tell us what culturally competent care is, and how can local providers improve in this area?
Yeah, so great question. So I want to get this right. So cultural competence in healthcare means that we are, or doctors, providers are providing care that literally respects and responds to patients' cultural identity, mm-hmm. right? So whether it's culture, whether it's linguistic, whether it's social context, and it makes sure that patients are going to receive care that's effective and it's inclusive, but also that it's equitable and that it's going to reduce any disparities. So whether it's something that has to deal with diabetes, whether it's something mm-hmm. Around birth rates for women.
Right.
So making sure that, hey, just because this person comes from a certain racial or socioeconomic standpoint, mm-hmm. they're getting the same treatment that their white counterparts are. You're not referring to a Hispanic the same way that you may be referring to a Black or an Indigenous person. Mm-hmm. You're looking at that person as a person and not based on what, you know, the color of the skin, the dialect of their tone, so on and so forth. I think specifically in here Vancouver, here Clark County, we have even, I'm thinking of a conference that I went to that Karen Morrison had with her Odyssey World program. It talked about how when you talk about culturally competent healthcare, it's about building trust and improving patient engagement, but then also kind of addressing the disparities and inequities all in the same token of breath. Mm-hmm. So looking at data to say, hey, why are there so many Black women who are dying when mm-hmm. it comes to birth rates? Right. Why are men getting, why are men dying from prostate cancer? Mm-hmm. Are they all being treated the same, or is there an underlying cause? And one of the things that I was listening to at that conference was people just seeing the differences in how they are treated. Yeah. I know from personal experience, I have Crohn's, and my over-the-phone consultation was completely different than my in-person consultation. It was kind of like, hey, let's address all of these things that mm-hmm. impact Black folks. And I'm just kind of like, well, that doesn't have anything to do with what my symptoms are. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about what the symptoms are? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting concept. It's not something that I really even paid attention to up until maybe the past kind of 3-4 years when it really started becoming like a bigger topic for me anyway.
Right, right. So we're also seeing rising numbers of unhoused people here in Clark County. What role do you see the NAACP in addressing homelessness, especially when it intersects with racial and economic disparities?
Let me be very clear. They need to just fix it.
They need to be fixed. Good answer.
We agree with that.
And it's interesting because I have a lot of thoughts on a lot of different things. And I'm going to answer it this way. I believe that the housing system was designed not to be successful, mm-hmm. right? So when you think about cancer, when you think about HIV, you think about diabetes, and you think about these big pharma agencies and organizations, they're billion-dollar, trillion-dollar profiting organizations and industries. Why would we really want to solve this crisis mm-hmm. on the backs of other people, mm-hmm. right? So sometimes I think of like these policies that are set up with not the person in mind, but hey, how can it impact the economy?
Right.
When you think about solving some of these crises in education, when you think about solving some of these crises in healthcare, when you think about solving the housing crisis, it's going to put a lot of organizations, a lot of people out of business. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, well, why do we really want to solve it? There's plenty of land. And I know that we're on Indigenous land, but there's plenty of land across this country that you see houses and buildings that are not being used. They're condemned, so on and so forth. You can figure out a way mm-hmm. to pass policy, find dollars and cents to house people.
Right.
It's just a matter to me of doing it and mm-hmm. figuring out how you bring people to the table to get it done.
Right. Thank you.
Well, another issue that's been front and center here in Clark County is public safety. Mm. And fortunately, there has been a passing of Proposition 5, which is, you know, giving some fund for additional police officers. We interviewed, by the way, the police and learned that we have a low number of officers in Vancouver. So how can the city, you know, balance public safety, but also equity, transparency, accountability in policing if they're adding new officers?
One, I think it's about relationships and figuring out, hey, what is the intent of the relationship? So when you think about the relationship, when you think about the hiring, when you think about the engagement, it's kind of like, hey, how do we stay vocal with our needs, but then how do we engage with these police officers at the same time? The Queer Community Network had a forum when they were doing the Pride Block Party, and people showed up in complete opposition against having the police present. And while, yes, everyone has, well, not everyone, but most people have their own perspectives of their experience with the police. But it's also kind of like we have to understand that having a staffed up police department is still not enough for the amount of people that are in, you know, Vancouver, mm-hmm. or the sheriff's to police department in Clark County. So when you talk about having like these additional officers, it's also about like, hey, how do we make sure that there's independent oversight? What is the training being done when we talk about bias and de-escalation? No, it's not just shoot to kill first. Are they being properly equipped and trained with those de-escalation strategies to figure out like, hey, these are the steps that we're taking to calm this person down, mm-hmm. or to address this situation. We're not just thinking worst case scenario.
Right.
If it calls for it, it calls for it. But we're not, you know, we're not saying, hey, we're proponents of that. But then I also think it's about having good, open, honest dialogue conversations with the chief of police, as well as, you know, the chief's administration. I know from our standpoint, we have a good open dialogue and relationship with the chief and even the chief's administration. Whenever we've asked for something or whenever we've asked to have a seat at a table or to invite them to the table, mm-hmm. they've showed up. And people cannot not invite them to the table and not be invited to the table at the same time.
Michael, I heard that you all have a terrific youth program called Act So. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so our Act So program is a program in essence that deals with science, technology, engineering, and math. And then it also recently has started dealing with communication and arts. So what they do is we pair children, youth from ages middle school, high school, with mentors. They compete regionally. Well, they deal with a curriculum. They compete regionally for a chance to go to the national conference. Last year it was in Charlotte. This year it's going to be in Chicago. And it just gives them exposure to a different world, mm-hmm. right? And it's a great program because some of these kids, when you think about the disparities of the education curriculum, mm-hmm. they don't have the luxury of being able to go and spend time with engineering and spend time with even focusing in on the arts and the culture space. Mm-hmm. You know, we see most of these things being cut from schools. Right. So we have a program that is funded. No one pays for anything. They come, they learn, there's exposed. And then ultimately they get to go, you know, if they want, they can go to college and major in some of those different some of those majors and those end up being careers for them.
Is this an after school program or how does it work?
So it's not after school. Oh. So we're partnering with another organization this mm-hmm. year that will, so it's set up, I guess you could say it's after school, but it's after school and it's on weekends. Okay. They have mentors, the yeah. mentors come in and it's kind of, it's built around a schedule of everyone.
Okay.
Now, community partnerships are such a big part of equity work. What partnerships does the NAACP have here in Clark County, and what do they do to help advance your goals on the ground?
Yeah, so I can't say that it's about advancing our goals. I think when I was asked to come on and join the NAACP, my perspective was, hey, how do we restore the image of the NAACP? How do we strengthen these relationships? And how do we as a community from a collective impact approach come together to solve all of the problems that everyone has, right? The issues that the League of Women Voters have may not be the same thing that the NAACP has. But when we said, hey, we were going to do a political forum, the first person that I called was Tracy Riley Kelly. So it's not about, hey, we're competing, right? It's about, mm-hmm. hey, how can we partner to get more? And I think that is what the biggest thing for us. We've spent a lot of time with a variety of different organizations, too many to name, from EOCF to LULAC to YWCA, just Clark County Volunteer Lawyers Program, to come together to say, hey, we all have one mission. It's the empowerment of people. It's for the advancement of people. How can we come together and partner, whether it's through community conversations, whether it's through different funding streams, so on and so forth. So for me, everything has been around that collective impact approach.
Well, I was going to ask how we could help you out, but instead I'll broaden it out. So what message would you like to share with listeners about how they can be more part of building a more equitable community?
I think show up and get involved. We all have our own expertise. We have our own mm-hmm. perspective and we have our own experience. And I think when you think of like, hey, what you want, what you desire, if you're just on the outside critiquing, if you're on the outside complaining, mm-hmm. your voice, your time, your talent, your treasures, your energy can be used so much better, not just with the NAACP, but with a lot of different organizations that are here in Vancouver, Clark County to make a more equitable standpoint.
I agree.
Well, then you see this as a community which is on the rise.
Absolutely. And for us, I think the NAACP is one cog in that wheel to advancing equity, right? It's about showing up. It's about listening. It's about being active. But again, not doing it alone. Mm-hmm. If we do it alone, we'd stay in these micro pockets and just keep working yep. in silos. We come together, we achieve more.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is our show. We're just in awe of the work that you're doing. Many thanks to you.
No, thanks
Reverend
for having
Michael
me.
Michael Jones of the NAACP. I'm Tracy Riley Kelly with Teresa Torres and Rachel Bancroft, and this is Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy. Citizen 411 is powered by the League of Women Voters of Clark County, produced at KXRW Studios in Vancouver. That's 99.9 on your radio, a nonprofit community radio station. You can learn more and listen to any of our shows by going to the Citizen 411 page on the KXRW website. And also, you can find out more about the League of Women Voters by visiting our webpage, lwvclarkcounty.org. Thanks.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all over Clark County or read online at vancouverfamilymagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.